From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark, here again with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, talking with you about what's new in healthy living, sharing some down-to-earth advice and great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, the number to call, 1-800-462-7413. And, of course, along with your calls, some topics to talk about, Zorba.
Yes, Mediterranean diet. What is the secret ingredient? Would you like to know? Mm-hmm. If so, we'll talk about that. And hearing and dementia. We're going to talk about new research that shows that a lack of hearing, hearing loss may be associated with dementia. What can we do about it? And where's the evidence?
Mm-hmm. And a yummy recipe.
Yes, garlic roasted asparagus with cotija. And if you don't know what cotija is, stay tuned because you're going to learn about it. It's a great recipe.
Excellent. Let's get to the phones now, Zorba. 1-800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. Our first caller, Zorba, is a listener in Edgewater, New Jersey. Hi.
Hey there. Hi, Tom. Hi, Zorba. Thanks for all the great information and the sense of humor, too.
Thanks a lot.
Here's my question. I want to run a 5K race.
Mm-hmm.
I walk maybe 10, 15 miles a week, I would like to do the race, you know? Mm-hmm. It's not a big project, but it's something I've wanted to do for quite a while.
Sure.
It seems whenever I try to jog more than, 15, 20 minutes, I can't do it. I run out of breath, and I just can't seem to get past this hurdle. If you look at the charts of how you should train for a 5K race, they say, first week you mostly walk with a little bit of running, second week a little more running, third week you should be about 50-50.
Mm-hmm.
I get stuck at the third week. I can't seem to progress between walking half the time and running half the time. Uh-huh. If I try to do it more, I get out of breath.
Get out of breath. Are you on any medications?
Yeah.
What medicines are you on, if any?
I do take Benicar for high blood pressure.
Benicar, okay.
Mm.
And
right.
I'm not familiar with that name brand. Is that a beta blocker? Because I wonder if that's the issue.
Mm.
What's the generic name?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah. Well, because one of the issues is, and once again, I'm not familiar with that, so I don't have a screen in front of me. I can't tell you what it is. If you have a beta blocker, that's part of the issue, is the what you're on for high blood pressure. That might be the thing that limits you when you get to that particular point.
I'll tell
point.
You, though. Even in the past, though, when I wasn't on a high blood pressure medication, when I was 30, I tried to do it.
Oh,
same thing happened. I was in high school, I ran every night, for months before track season.
Mm-hmm.
Wanted to be on the track team.
Uh-huh.
I couldn't get past the hurdle.
So this has been going on for many years, even when you were younger, when you weren't on a medication that could possibly be causing a beta blockade. You've had trouble getting. So what happens? You get to that point, and do you sweat? Do you become short of breath? What kind of symptoms do you have?
I just feel like if I keep running, I'm going to run out of breath, and I'm not going to be able to sustain myself.
So what do? Do you start walking at that point? For how long?
Right.
For how long?
Several minutes until I feel like I've caught my breath, and then I'll start running again.
So several minutes, for like 30 seconds.
Maybe I should push myself a little harder. Maybe that's the answer, because I wait until I'm reasonably caught up with my breath.
Right.
I mean, they always say, and I guess it isn't really true, when you're running, you should still be able to converse. I couldn't do that because I'm
too out of
breath.
When I run and I exercise too much, I can't converse. I can hardly think. It all depends on where you are. But I want to go back to this training thing. So let's assume you get to the wall. Your wall is just early on. People who run marathons also say they get to a wall. So you get to a wall, and then you walk. And what's your pulse? Do you know what your pulse is at that point? Have you ever taken your pulse?
When I'm on a treadmill, when it's cold and I'm on a treadmill, my pulse is pretty high. And maybe I'm just, I guess for a person around my age, 60, it should be around 150, I guess, or 140
well,
something.
I'm usually there. The pulse is 220 minus your age, you know, so it's 220, okay. You know, 220 minus 60, which is 160, is your maximum pulse. So, and if you want to do aerobic capacity, the idea is to do 80% of that. So it's really in the 125, 130 range. What happens on the treadmill? Do you get to the same problem? Is it a time thing on the treadmill?
Yeah. If I try to go faster, like 5 or 6 miles an hour, I'm out of breath, and I got to go back to like 4 miles an hour, and then I'll do that for a little while until I've caught my breath, and then I try to go back up. But
why don't you just stick at 4 miles an hour and see if you can do the 5K at 4 miles an hour?
I can do that.
Why don't you just do that?
But then I'm really just walking. I'm not even really
running. No, 4.5 miles an hour.
My feet are not leaving the treadmill, you know?
Well, then 4.5 miles. What you want to do is you want to get yourself to the point where you are functional. If you find that you're short of breath at that point, you don't want to give yourself a 2 minute or 3 minute time to settle down. I think you want to give yourself a 20 second or 30 second in order to get the training effect. So you may be waiting too long in between those times. That's number one. Maybe waiting too long. Number two, the reality is you may want to look in on the treadmill and say, hey, 5 I'm running, 4 I'm walking. Let me get to 4.5 on the treadmill. I can measure it and then see how long you can go in 4.5. And then you slow it down to 4 and you try to run when you're doing 4, but you're slowing it down to 4 and you see if you can you can still run at 4. You don't have to walk. Because when you're running, you're jumping. That's what you're doing. I think you're not getting the training effect because you may be lasting too long when you find you've hit that wall. Now, why you're hitting that wall so quickly, I don't have any idea. I don't know why. 5K, as you say, is not really a long race. And since it's been going, but there's something that's going on, I'd get to that and I wouldn't do the rest period as long as you're doing. I also would find out about the med that you're on. Once again, I don't know. I'm not familiar with that med, and see if it's a beta blocker. And if it bothers you, your doc may want to switch you to a different med. I have patients who are not on beta blockers, if that's what you're on. We have many different kinds of blood pressure medications, and you might be on one that is retarding, you know, and restraining your activity. I have another question. Why do you want to do a 5K?
I have so many friends who are runners. And I feel like, gee, you know, this guy started running at 55. He's now doing a half marathon next month in New York City. This other guy, he was on his cross country team in high school, and he still does running. You know, and I feel like, gee, I'm the guy that has to walk.
But the reality is, the social environment is motivating you to become healthier and healthier, and I really celebrate that. I mean, that is a wonderful thing to do. The reality is you are going to be able to do a 5K. You just have to figure out how you're going to do it. Even if you have to walk in that middle of 5K, you want to do a 20-second walk. You want to do a short walk. But I think you can get through that by a little bit more training and figuring out how you get to that 4.5 mile per hour thing. And that's what you do. I do – when I run – I do between 4, I'm 72, I do between 4 and 5. And at 4, I'm not walking, I'm running. So I must have shorter legs than you do. How tall are you?
I'm 5'8".
Oh, so you're taller than me, you know, by not much, a couple of inches. So you can do it at 4.5 miles per hour. Congratulations, keep up the good work.
All right, if I hit the 5K and I successfully do it, I'll give you a call back.
Thank you, appreciate it.
Thanks for your help.
You guys make me tired.
That's the guy we do. We make you tired just to, but you know, here it is. He's going out. He wants to be with his friends. It shows you where social relationships play a major role in healthful activities. And here's the problem. If all of your friends smoke, you're also more likely to smoke. And if you decide to quit smoking, it's harder because of your social relationship. So it also occurs on that other side.
Well, I've always wanted to run a marathon, too, but I can't fit it into my busy schedule.
Right.
800-462-7413 if you want to talk with Zorba. But before our next call, Zorba, researchers have discovered Mediterranean diet ingredient may extend life.
Yeah, there's a secret ingredient in the Mediterranean diet. Secret? What do you think the secret ingredient is? That's right. Is it Like sitting around and having really good food, sitting around with people. You know, it's the way they eat in the Mediterranean diet. For a while, we thought it basically was something in the red wine, because often people along the Mediterranean Sea have some red wine. Not a lot of red wine, but they often drink what we would say a small little glass or two glasses. And their resveratrol was thought to be in the red wine, and that was doing it. And so there was a whole bunch of information on it, and then there was a bunch of, you know, people were manufacturing resveratrol, and then Dr. Oz said, yes, it's resveratrol. I know, because I've got all that information. It's resveratrol. But it appears not to be the resveratrol. It appears that it's probably the olive oil, that the olive oil in the Mediterranean diet is actually activating a pathway that's good for our heart. And this fits with the king of, the sort of king of diets, the Med diet, and what was discovered in JAMA in an article many, many years ago, and I fit with that. And the idea is that these lipid droplets that come in and store fat are broken down during exercise, and this good oil actually allows these droplets to break down versus bad oil. It sort of, if you will, encourages arteriosclerosis. So, I think, once again, it shows you that olive oil is the oil of choice. Canola oil maybe is the secondary, choice oil that we're going to use. But olive oil is really very important. And if you're going to have a salad, you're going to have something delicious. You know, we often have salads during the day. Olive oil is what you want to use. And if you look at prepared salad dressings like Paul Newman, I often buy Paul Newman salad dressing. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have olive oil. If you look on it, it's usually soybean oil, cottonseed oil. Did you know that cottonseeds have oil?
No.
Well, they do. Cottonseeds have oil, soybean oil. They may look into corn oil, of course. So when you have prepared salad dressings, you don't have olive oil, which brings me back to the fact that cooking for yourself is great. Making your own salad dressing, you can buy pre-mixes, mixing it with olive oil and the right type of vinegar, finding your taste of what you like. My wife likes more vinegar than I do, so basically she'll take balsamic vinegar and she pours it all over her salad with a little bit of olive oil. I pour a lot of olive oil on my salad with a little vinegar. Olive oil is the secret ingredient in the Mediterranean diet.
Yeah, I feel guilty. I never have olive oil.
You never? What do you have when you have a salad? You just use a prepared dressing?
Salad? is our number. That's 1-800-462-7413. On we go, Zorba.
With a
listener now in Manhattan, New York. Hi.
Hi there. Thank you so much for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Tom and Dr. Zorba, I so enjoy you, and I learn so much.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
My question is about an absurdly high B12 mm-hmm. level. Mm-hmm. I haven't eaten red meat in over 35 years.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Yes, and mm-hmm. even when I was mm-hmm. totally vegan mm-hmm. for a number of years, my B12 uh-huh. level was super high.
Uh-huh.
And the lowest, I have mm-hmm. Blood mm-hmm. reports, lab reports sitting in front of me mm-hmm. back just to 2017.
Mm-hmm.
And the lowest it had been was 14, let me see, 1455.
Uh-huh.
1455.
That's pretty high.
Mm-hmm. No, and now this mm-hmm. last blood that was taken last month, mm-hmm. all it says, it doesn't give a number, it just says over 2,000.
Over 2,000. By the way, why are they doing B12 levels? That's what I want to know.
I have no idea.
We don't do B12 levels unless we're worried about pernicious anemia or something else. So your doc, who's doing the B12 levels? Your doctor or?
Yes, mm-hmm. my internist.
Mm-hmm. I want to look at B12 and a little bit from the ALT. So mm-hmm. we have discovered liver enzymes, ALT, AST. Those two enzymes are the ones that are measured usually in chemistry panels, can be elevated because of what we call fatty infiltration of the liver. We live in a society where fat gets stored in the liver because we eat a lot of food. And so that can often produce, if you will, an irritation of the liver such that we see minor elevations of liver function tests. So they are common. In other words, once it gets to be a certain level, 5 or 10 times normal, then we're definitely, of a concern. But a little bit above normal is not very – is usually not something of concern. If we worry about it, we go, hey, they're elevated. We want to know what to do. Then we get an ultrasound of the liver because that'll pick up if there's fatty infiltration of the liver. And then all we do is say, eat better, eat right, eat a Mediterranean diet, try to get to a normal weight because that's the treatment for it. So if there's a concern, it's the ultrasound that's the answer. Cheaper test. Don't have to go to the CAT scan. That's what often works. B12 levels, we do not measure unless we worry about things. Now, what's interesting is that it was even high when you had a vegan. Do you have any idea? B12 only comes from animal sources. Where do you think it came from if you were a vegan, total vegan?
Yeah, I don't know. The only vitamin, I can tell what you, I was told.
Without a vitamin, I can tell you exactly where it came from.
Okay.
Insects.
Tell me.
Insects.
Oh,
insect
God.
Parts. No matter
oh,
what
God.
You have, when you're a vegetarian or a vegan and they prepare food, there always are insect parts, microscopic insect parts in all the food that we eat, you know, because when they do it and they process it, no matter what they do, there's no such thing as absolute cleanliness. Because they've discovered this in people in India who were lifetime vegans. So everyone in their family is vegan. In their entire life, they never touched an animal product and they could not figure out where the B12 came from until they looked around and realized it came from these microscopic parts that we actually eat. And because, you know, I mean, that's, we eat organic food. You know, food is organic. It's not sterilized. Now, why you have high levels, I have no idea. I don't have an answer for that. But I can assure you of one thing. It's not bad. There's no disease associated with a high level of B12. And I don't know why your doctor is measuring B12, because we don't measure it. There's no reason to measure B12 unless we're looking for pernicious anemia or a reason for low B12. And that would be kind of the other question I would say. You should say, Doc, why are you measuring my B12 levels? You ought to bring it up to him or her.
Well, I do also have, on the December test, my iron was low and my ferritin was low. Uh-huh.
So are you menstruating?
Oh, no. No, I'm
how old
I'm older than that.
You're old?
In about 2 weeks, I'm going to be 67.
Well, you sound like you're 39.
People, thank you. I am actually a health fanatic. So the liver thing. I have been for many years too thin, or they would say, "Oh my God, you're so thin." Uh-huh. So can a person? And right now, my
then
weight, I feel fat for me. I'm a normal weight.
I would not do anything about it. And I have patients who have had these minor elevations for 20, 30 years. It doesn't mean anything.
So
in other words, remember when we set the normals. It's not a lab error, but we set the normals at a certain normal to detect things, but it also means we catch people who are actually normal, but the lab test is slightly abnormal. If you're normal weight, you exercise, you eat right, you just follow the numbers. They'll probably be like this for the rest of your life. Liver enzymes can vary very minimally, and they don't have any meaning.
Mm-hmm.
They're very different from kidney enzymes. And B12, as I said, I wouldn't be concerned about, and keep up the good work. As I said, you sound like you're 39.
Well, actually, so do you.
Thanks a lot. I'll take the compliment. Thanks.
Oh, my goodness.
You have a great day. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. You too. And thank you very much.
We appreciate
keep
that.
Keep doing
call.
The great work you're doing. Thank you.
Thank you.
800-462-7413 is our number. That's 800-462-7413. Zorba, are you making this up about the insect parts and vegetarian?
No, not at all.
I've never heard of that.
No, it's very interesting. These are lifetime vegans in India who live in an environment which is not unusual. In India, the restaurants are veg and non-veg. Very different, isn't it? Vegetarian, you're going to veg or non-veg. And they cannot figure out because it does not come from a plant source. And it turned out there are insect parts. So when you're eating vegetables and stuff like that, it may be totally clean, but it actually is not. It's organic. And that's okay. We live with insects. I mean, just like we live with bacteria on our body. You know, we think of ourselves as sterile environments, but we're not. We're not. You know.
Interesting.
You think I actually make things up? Come on, Tom. Come on. I don't make make things up. I'm an honest doctor. I say everything I say is, you know, truth. Okay. You know, the whole truth and nothing but the truth.
Okie doke.
So help me. So
before
help
the break now, Zorba, time for the segment where you clarify something a listener has read on the internet. This is Google Doc. Okay, Zorba, I'm curious. Have you ever looked at your own Wikipedia page to see what it says?
Yeah, years ago. I haven't looked at it in years. Not at all. Not at all. In fact, I don't know what it says.
Okay. Well,
maybe I have to edit it a bit.
We received a tip from a listener named Dom who said that there was something out of the ordinary written on your Wikipedia entry. So, Zorba, here's the printout.
Okay.
Of your Wikipedia page.
Okay, you know, I got to tell you.
Yeah,
I want you
to read it out loud now.
All right,
tell me if anything jumps out at you.
Okay.
But first, Brad, can you lay down some background music for this?
I got it. Okay. Yeah. Okay, I have not read this. Zorba Pastor was born and raised in Chicago. He hosts a weekly radio show on personal health issues called Zorba Pastor on Your Health. So far, that's true. Show is produced by Wisconsin Public Radio, syndicated by the Public Radio Exchange, and is broadcast on public radio stations around the United States. The show's trademark is lighthearted, humorous approach made possible by Zorba's banner. That's pretty nice. I did not write this. And his co-host, Tom Clark. The show's style is somewhat similar to National Public Radio's Car Talk, providing callers both with good advice and kind-hearted ribbing. Pastor received his pre-med degree from the University of Wisconsin-Madison, yay, and his MD degree from the University of Illinois-Chicago, did his internship and residency at Dalhousie University, School of Medicine and Health in Halifax, Nova Scotia. Right. He's a practicing physician at the Dean Medical Center near Madison, Wisconsin. Additionally, he's a professor of family medicine at the University of Wisconsin-Madison School of Public Health. That's true. Where he teaches medical residents. He and his family lives in Oregon, Wisconsin. In addition, Dr. Pastor also holds a patent for the bouillon cube, which he invented while attending
the
university.
I didn't know that. I never know
the
that.
Bouillon cube. I do not own the patent for the bouillon cube. Who put that in? Who put the patent in for the bouillon cube? That's ridiculous. You know what it shows? You've got to read your own Wikipedia page to see if that's on.
Did you see something online that you're not quite sure about? Zorba's here to clarify the clickbait. Just post on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
Our delicious recipe coming up, along with the more of your calls, of course, right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange.
Who put that in?
Tom Clark here with Family Doc Zorba Pastor on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That number again, 1-800-462-7413. But Zorba, before our next call, garlic roasted asparagus with cotija.
Yeah, good. You pronounced it well. Excellent. You know what?
I always know how to pronounce garlic.
That's right, garlic is there. And asparagus just rolls off your tongue.
Yeah, right.
Like
I have
nothing.
No trouble
that's
at all.
And roasted, you nailed it with roasted. And with, you really did. Cojita, a little, I'm not exactly. So cojita is a type of Mexican cheese. And if you go to a local grocery store that has an Hispanic section, you will find cotija. And if you've ever been to Mexico and had corn on the street, Mexican street corn, they put a cheese on it. That is cotija cheese. Mm. And it's a very specific type of cheese, kind of like it tastes like feta is a specific taste. You can't explain it. I mean, who can explain taste anyway? But it's got a full-bodied, robust taste. And this will be great with cotija. So you've got to find a grocery that has Mexican section of it. Want to make it?
Sure.
Good. I know Let's do it. You're excited about this because you like to experiment with various types of food in your house.
I'm always interested.
That's right. Always interested. Well, you've got a master kitchen. You just redid your house and put in a brand new kitchen with stainless steel ovens and everything else, and you know, like a chef kind of a thing. Am I wrong? We have a stove
we don't use and a microwave.
That's right, which you do use. And a hot plate. Do you have a hot plate in your house?
No.
Do they still make hot plates? Before microwaves, hot plates were big.
Yeah.
Remember?
Yep.
If you had a little teeny apartment, you had to have a hot plate so you could boil water and put in ramen. Yeah. I mean, now it's
not. No, we don't have time for the recipes.
No, I'm sorry. Okay. Garlic roasted asparagus with cotija. Okay, start out with a half pound of fresh asparagus.
Half pound fresh asparagus?
Remember you could only get asparagus like in the springtime? I mean, now you can get it almost all year round. I mean, it used to be a seasonal product. I'm going to use a half teaspoon of salt, preferably kosher salt.
Half a little tea salt.
Half teaspoon of fresh ground black pepper.
Half a little tea fresh ground black pepper.
What kind of a pepper grinder do you have in your house?
We do have a pepper
grinder. Yeah, you do. Because it tastes totally different than, you know, in a paper.
Yeah, anything but a pepper grinder.
No, pepper grinder tastes it's completely
so much
different.
Better.
Yeah, no doubt about it. See, step up. Starts with a pepper grinder, ends with a culinary gourmet kitchen. Mm. That's what's going to happen.
Yeah. This is interesting. I'm actually into this recipe.
Okay, then I'll continue it. Right. 3 cloves of minced garlic.
3 cloves, minced garlic.
2 to 3 tablespoons, I'd go to the higher end, of cotija cheese.
2 to 3 big T, cotija cheese.
Excellent. And some olive oil spray.
Mm-hmm. Olive oil spray.
So let's make the recipe. Preheat the oven to 425. Lined a baking sheet with aluminum foil. Set it aside. Rinse the asparagus. Trim off the woody pieces. Spread them out in a thin layer on top of that baking sheet. Spray it with a coat of cooking oil, olive oil spray. You can buy little spray cans where you actually can put the olive in yourself. Sprinkle it with salt, pepper, garlic, and the cotija cheese. Use your hands to mix the asparagus with all of the ingredients. Lay it out even on a layer. Spray one more light coat of olive oil. So there's olive oil over the whole thing. Shove it in the oven for 8 minutes. Remove it. Serve it immediately. So you've got roasted asparagus with this really delicious cheese on top of it. That kind of, to me, when I think about it, it sort of tastes like feta, but it's not really feta. It doesn't taste like cheddar at all, but it really is good.
Now,
really
what would you serve with that?
Anything else you want. Anything else you want. What I would serve with it would probably be salmon, because I love salmon. Mm-hmm. I would have some salmon on there with that little lemon pepper salmon, because this has a robust taste. So I would serve it with salmon that would sort of be an olive oil butter-based salmon. That would be really good. I'd have a glass of red wine. We might as well go to it. And then I might have some fresh fruit or maybe a little vanilla ice cream with some de leche on top of its syrup. And then I would have company. I'd have 2 to 4 people, my good friend. I'm just telling you how I'm going to eat this.
Oh,
good friends, you know, sitting around, maybe some light music in the background that would make you happy in a house, and maybe a fire in the fireplace.
Would you invite Monica and me?
Yeah, of course. Of course. In fact, you're welcome to come over. Come on. Come on over. You be the friends that we'd be sitting at, and we would have a robust conversation of something that would be non-political in nature that we would enjoy. We would discuss maybe the environment and the upcoming spring.
800-462-7413 is our number. And Zorba, a listener with us now in Cumberland, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. How can we help?
So my son he's now 4. He just turned 4 a couple days ago. He has tetralogy of Fallot.
Mm-hmm. Explain that, what that is. I'll explain it to people. Okay. Most people do not know what tetralogy of Fallot is. Let's ask Tom Clark. He's one of the most people. Tom, do you know what tetralogy of Fallot is? That's the answer. Well, the answer is you're born with the tetralogy means there are four different things. Abnormality in the heart, which is not sustainable with life. And he had surgery how many weeks when he was how many weeks old?
He had his full repair at 5 weeks old.
At 5 weeks old. You do it, and the repair, I mean, this is one of the major steps forward in cardiovascular surgery, was treating the tetralogy of flow. So you can look it up in Wikipedia. It's very important. So please go on now.
So he was on ECMO, which is like dialysis.
Correct.
Two days after surgery for 4 days, mm-hmm. he had a small bleed in his brain. Mm-hmm. Well, it was on the outside layering of his brain, not directly mm-hmm. on his brain.
Uh-huh.
Otherwise, he's been fine since that. He also has coloboma.
Coloboma. What is coloboma?
They also call it a keyhole eye. It's where the iris extends into the color part of their eye.
Oh, okay.
So it looks like a cat eye or like a lizard eye.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Yes, but, I know what that is, but I didn't know the name of it. So does he wear special glasses to keep out too much light?
No, he's not too sensitive to light. He mm-hmm. does have glasses. Mm-hmm. But from what I was told, it's just cosmetic. It's nothing to do with his actual vision.
Actual function of the iris. Okay.
Correct.
So
yep.
his iris functions.
Mm-hmm. He's had lots of surgeries. He's had his tonsils and adenoids taken out. Mm-hmm. He's had tubes in his ears.
Mm-hmm. A lot of stuff. A lot of stuff.
Lots of stuff, uh-huh. yes.
How's he doing?
He's not a normal four-year-old. I have mm-hmm. four children.
Uh-huh.
And he's not a normal four-year-old.
Meaning what when you say not a normal?
He gets very aggressive. He will sit in front of the TV and just stare and stare, and he doesn't, and that's the only thing he kind of does, like for staring. He'll just start screaming. He'll just be playing, so totally fine, and then all of a sudden just start screaming.
Mm-hmm.
Or he gets so rambunctious,
mm-hmm.
he's throwing things and hitting things.
Oh, tough stuff. How old are your other kids?
11, 6, and 1.
Uh-huh. 11, 6, and 1. Oh, so you've had one after that. Where have you taken him? Have you gotten him evaluated?
I brought this up to his cardiologist that I've heard
mm-hmm.
Some babies that have a lot of heart surgeries when they're younger are starting to develop PTSD. Mm-hmm. And going through kind of a generic checklist, it's like that's everything he's showing signs of.
Well,
and
he definitely has something going on psychologically.
Right, and I've talked to his pediatrician, and mm-hmm. she's trying to find what to do, but there's so little articles about heart babies showing these signs, and I don't want to put them on a long-term medication.
Well, the real issue is, number one, he needs an evaluation. He needs a psychological evaluation from a child psychiatrist either in your town or at a referral center to make a diagnosis. That's number one. I mean, you can't do anything without a diagnosis. Maybe he has PTSD, maybe he's got autism, maybe he's got some other sensitivity, but it's clear we don't know what he has. But he's got something important. You've got four kids. You're a good mom. You know children. We have four children. After you have four kids, you kind of know what's going on. And besides, he's engaging in aggressive behavior, which is bad. You can't engage in aggressive behavior and develop normally. So,
yeah, I caught him choking the littlest one when he's gotten mad, so I can't even leave him in the room.
No, so you've got
alone with the baby.
Yeah, you can't leave him. You got to figure out what's going on. That's number one. Number two, let's make an assumption that there is a drug for him. I don't know if there is, but let's just make an assumption that an antidepressant calms him down enough. It's not a tranquilizer, and so that it's useful. Don't throw that out the window and say you don't want to put him on a lifetime. It's not necessarily a lifetime, but he needs to develop normal behavior so that he knows where the limits are so he can function within a social structure, or you're going to have trouble, and he's going to have trouble forever. And so you need a diagnosis, you need a child psychiatrist to come up with an answer of what this is, and then you need to know whether or not he needs special counseling in order to develop this, just like we do speech therapy. What sort of therapy does he need? Or does he need medication on a temporary basis, not necessarily a lifetime? But none of this will occur without a diagnosis, and you don't have one. You need
right.
to take him somewhere. Talk to your primary care doc and say, this is not good enough. I want a psychiatric referral. Where do I go? And if you don't know where you go to a university center or a big center that deals with stuff like this. You know, at the UW, there's the Weissman Institute, where they deal all sorts of behavioral problems. But most importantly, they make a decision on what's going on and what sort of a diagnosis he has. He's had trauma. He's had multiple surgeries. He's been in ECMO, which is sort of like a heart-lung machine, you know, to people. And so he's had other things going on. There are other people who have had these issues, too, with kids. You need somebody who knows what the other issues are. You need to go outside of the space to basically a tertiary care center and figure out what's going on. And you should do it now when he's four. Do not wait until he's five or six or seven.
Right, yeah. I want to get this taken care of. I mean, he's starting school this fall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, lots of time. Lots of time.
Yeah.
Lots of time.
I mean, he does good at daycare. He does lash out once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't want him having problems at school or falling behind.
But this is like speech therapy. You know, kids have speech problems. We send them to speech therapy. They learn the proper way to speak. He needs some sort of behavioral therapy. There's no doubt about that. What kind? You don't know what to do without a diagnosis. He may need medication on a temporary basis, or he may not need medication. But you need somebody who knows what he has and understands his problems. And you don't want somebody who says, I'm not sure I'm going to do research. No, 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 no. Tertiary care center, that's what you need.
Okay, sounds great. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Let us know what happens. Good luck. And if you have trouble finding a center, you call us back and we'll find somebody for you. Your doc should be able to do it, but you want to go within your insurance company and you want to do it, and you want to do it now. Do not wait.
Okay. All right, sounds great. Thank you so much for your
time.
You're
welcome.
Yeah, thank you so much for the call at 800-462-7413.
You know, part of the issue and why we do the show is sometimes people are saying, look, I've got one idea here, cardiovascular surgeon. I've got one, my primary care doctor, whoever it is. And I'm not really sure what to do. I want to sort it out. And sometimes you really just sort of need second opinion. And that's kind of what we do here. And that's enough to say, oh, never thought about that. Should bring him to a child psychiatrist. She needs a diagnosis of her child now, because when the kid gets to school and then causes a problem, you don't want that. You want to figure out what it is beforehand so children can know their limits.
Makes sense. 800-462-7413. And before we take a break now, Zorba, let's check in with your favorite Mensa wannabes, the Grammar Police.
Oh, no, it's the Grammar Police.
Have we lost any listeners?
I don't know. That's right. Hey, look, when I was in elementary school, I was a high soprano. I know that shocks you because I'm a baritone now. But I just hated my voice because I could reach all the high notes. So please go on.
Anyway, Zorba, the following message was posted on the Zorba Pastor on Your Health Facebook page. It came from Grammar Police Cadet Charles in Madison, Wisconsin. Charles wrote, "Hey, Zorba and Tom, on a recent show, you said that research reported that exercise and meditation were good for your body and your mind. Since mind is a function of the brain and the brain is a part of the body, shouldn't it be enough to say that these things are good for one's body?"
You know, there's always something to nitpick if you really want to look at it. Yes, the whole thing is physical. It's all physical. And as Aristotle thought, the thing up inside our skull is just to cool the body. That's what he thought. He thought that this was an air conditioning system up here, and he had no idea. Yeah, I guess you could say that. It's really all
you're saying
body.
Charles is a nitpicker?
I don't want to accuse him. I take all my Grammar Police seriously. You know what I say to Charles? Thank you very much.
Want to join the beloved Grammar Police? We don't mind. Just post on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org. And don't forget, as it said on my Wikipedia page, I also invented the bouillon cube.
More of your calls coming up and another interesting topic to talk about right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange.
Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Zorba, before our next call, can hearing aids help prevent dementia?
Oh, it's a big issue. This is not a small issue. It's a very big issue. So I want to start out with really the Lancet article that started this all out in 2017. And Lancet convened, great journal, a commission of published research looking at risk factors for dementia that could be prevented. In other words, we know if you're on a statin and you've got cardiovascular disease, that may prevent dementia, et cetera, et cetera. And the surprising conclusion was that hearing loss may be statistically accounting for 9 to 10% of all dementia. Hmm. Now, why this is, we don't know. So let's look at the recent article from JAMA Otolaryngology that looked at cognitive performance in people who have hearing loss. In other words, what do they do in tests on hearing loss? And then lo and behold, they found people who had hearing loss often did worse on cognitive tests. In other words, unamplified hearing loss causes problems. Now, it's unclear why it actually happens. In the long run, we don't really know. But there are enough hints. The functional MRI scans have shown that the ear, when the ear sends a garbled signal to the brain, remember, it's got to differentiate mm-hmm. between ambient noise outside, has to look at it, say, what are these sounds, and it's got to identify the words and then do things. Well, the result of poor hearing means that the background noise may interfere with all of the information going to the frontal cortex, which is where we have reasoning, decision-making, memory, as opposed to simple sort of sound recognition. And so the reality is garbled noise isn't good for the brain. Mm-hmm. And if you have noise, basically, that says this is speech, it is good for the brain.
Yeah. As you know, I have hearing aids, and I don't think I could live without them. I love my hearing aids. I'm not sure that it's keeping me from dementia.
Right. Well, that's another problem. But these are very important issues. So a lot of reasons people don't get hearing aids are, A, they're expensive. But the most important thing is people go, I don't want to have hearing aids. It means I'm old. And so as a result, there are very, very few people, based on the total number of people in the U.S. who actually have hearing loss, who get hearing aids. And you get what you pay for. The better the hearing aid, the better it works, because it amplifies only that which needs to be amplified. It's not just turn up the volume on everything.
I spent a lot of money to get them, but they definitely are worth it.
No, that's what it is. You want the bells and the whistles and the things from hearing aids. And you can shop. Big box stores like Costco also have hearing aids that are excellent. But the important thing is to recognize that hearing loss is associated with dementia. And just like sometimes we talk to ourselves out loud, why do we do that? There must be something that goes into the actual ear, which is important for our brain. So like we exercise our body, we exercise our mind for thinking things. We have to exercise our ears by taking hearing aids. If you have a hearing loss, get a hearing aid.
800-462-7413, our number. Back to the phones now, Zorba. We welcome a caller in Carmel, California. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help?
My husband suffers from IBS, irritable bowel syndrome. Mm-hmm. Had it for over 5 years. Uh-huh. And the question is, it's a terrible, terrible
thing. No, it is. What kind of symptoms does he have? Tell me what his symptoms are.
Oh, Lordy. He has to go, suffers from having to go to the bathroom constantly. Mm-hmm. He suffers from pain in mm-hmm. his gut.
Okay.
Very discomfort. Mm-hmm. It has gas.
Mm-hmm. Bloating, gas. Oh, he's got the whole ball of wax.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. He's got the whole ball of wax. Mm-hmm. And it means that it's very difficult to travel, and, of course, he's not feeling well
a lot of
the time.
So, first of all, is he taking any medications for this at all?
Yeah, they started him first. Of course, he had a colonoscopy originally uh-huh. to rule out cancer.
Okay.
And then they locally here, they gave him a few, here in Carmel, they gave him some probiotics.
Mm-hmm.
And none of that worked. So he went to Stanford, and he's mm-hmm. been, but he's being worked by then. And of course, he does the FOMAP diet.
Good. When did he start the FODMAP diet?
Oh, he must have started that 4 years ago. He's been on it for a long time. He eats almost nothing.
Mm-hmm.
He eats no fruit, no gluten, no lactose, mm-hmm. no large portions.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not a normal life.
Mm-hmm.
And he is taking a stool softener, mm-hmm. and he also takes a drug called dicyclomine.
Okay.
Yes, dicyclomine. Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And he tried Bowen Works,
uh-huh.
tried craniosacral.
Uh-huh.
Of course, our diet is, restricted.
Of course.
But there just doesn't seem to be any hope.
I want to go back just a little bit. So he takes a stool softener. A capsule, yes. A pill, stool softener? Okay. Is he taking Metamucil, by the way? Has he taken Metamucil?
Yes, he does. He does take that.
Mm-hmm. How much? He takes it every day, every other day?
Yeah, I think he takes it every day.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, first of all, I'd get rid of the stool softener. They're worthless. Stool softeners are worthless. How much Metamucil? Let's look at the fiber in his diet. First of all, FODMAP diet, F-O-D-M-A-P, very important for irritable bowel syndrome. Hopefully it'll work. If it doesn't do anything for it, there's no reason to stay on it. In other words, I mean, he has to experiment with it, and if the FODMAP doesn't change, then I wouldn't go on the FODMAP diet. I'd go on a Mediterranean diet because you want to know whether or not it works for you. I mean, that's very important because that has to do with basically how your gut is metabolizing things. How much Metamucil is he taking? Sometimes changing the fiber in your diet can really make a big difference. Taking it once a day or twice a day?
I think he's only taking it once a day.
First of all, this is very difficult to treat. I mean, as you know, you've gone to Stanford, mm-hmm. you've gone to other doctors. There's no absolute answer here. It's very, very difficult, especially. How old is your husband?
He's 77.
77. You know, there also is chronic diarrhea that simply occurs in people that are older, and we don't quite understand it. So one of the things I would try is I would try putting fiber into his diet throughout the day and see if that works. And that would be taking a teaspoon of Metamucil 3 to 4 times a day, not necessarily increasing it, in a glass of water, and see whether or not continuous fiber in the day can make a difference. I mean, Metamucil is an easy way to get some fiber in the diet. That's the first thing I would do. Second thing, does he eat any dairy products such as yogurt?
No, nothing like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's totally lactose-free.
Uh-huh. Is that because he has trouble with lactose or just because of the FODMAP diet?
Probably both. I don't know.
I would consider, after you do the Metamucil, see what happens with that. Another thing I would experiment with is yogurt. I would just experiment with it because yogurt is lactobacillus. If he has trouble with lactase because he can't actually do it, then you put some lactase. You put lactate drops in the yogurt, or he takes a pill. And I would try introducing yogurt into his diet to see what works. So three different things. Number one, stop the FODMAP and see whether or not it's working. I mean, why limit yourself with the FODMAP? It's not doing anything. We don't really know. In other words, stop the FODMAP and see what happens. If it's the same thing, give it up and start eating a more variety of foods of a Mediterranean diet because FODMAP doesn't work for anyone. Number two, regular fiber throughout the day, teaspoon of Metamucil 3 or 4 times a day. Number three, consider simply introducing yogurt into a FODMAP diet if FODMAP works because it's lactobacillus. I would try those things, and you've got to give it a 2 to 6 week trial period before any of them. And we don't understand much about irritable bowel syndrome, as you can see. Great brains at Stanford, great research institution, great ideas. You've read about it on the web. We don't understand a lot, but those are three things I'd suggest.
Thank you so much. From sunny California, which I know you hate, appreciate it if this works.
No,
we lived in Wisconsin forever in Milwaukee and love cross-country skiing, et cetera. Don't do it anymore.
I don't blame you.
You take care now.
800-462-7413 is our number. Okay, Zorba, let's share a listener question. The following email came to us from Michelle, who writes, Dr. Zorba, what is your opinion on receiving a series of allergy shots to lessen my dog allergy? I have a strong allergy to dogs. I had my blood tested several years ago to confirm that. I have a giant dog now, a Danif, a mix of English Mastiff and Great Dane. Previously, I had an English Mastiff, but the only effect I had was it would burn my eyes if I touched my eyes after petting him or if I got too close to him. Wow. My dog now of 30 months doesn't affect my eyes, but I have a near chronic cough. I was just in Las Vegas for 4 days and didn't cough at all. I've noticed this effect from other vacations, so I am certain the cough comes from the dog.
Well, I definitely would try the shots. No doubt about it. This is where you look at allergy shots and see whether or not it's going to make a difference. And for some people it does and some people it doesn't. But I am definitely pro-shot for something of this nature. And then if not, you either live with what you have and limit the amount of exposure you have with the dog. I have allergies to dogs. We can have poodles. Poodles don't bother me at all, but other dogs do. So, yes, try the shots.
I have a tricky health question for Zorba. He'll give it a shot. Just send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
800-462-7413. But before we head out for today, Zorba, why don't you put on your black robe and unholster your gavel, break out the judicial bongo drums. This is the segment we call Judge Zorba.
I'm ready.
Okay. The following email came to us from a Wisconsin listener named Ron. He writes, Dr. Pastor, I've gotten conflicting advice on whether to avoid grapefruit and or grapefruit juice when one is on a statin. I've been prescribed 40 milligrams a day of simvastatin. The label states I must avoid grapefruit juice. Yet, in 2006, a physician in the VA's healthcare system said I only need to take them 2 hours apart from one another. Who's right? Is there any difference between whole grapefruit and the juice?
Well, there's no difference between whole grapefruit and the juice. And it's the amount of grapefruit juice you actually drink. If you're drinking a liter of grapefruit juice, that's a lot of juice. You're having a glass. It's not. The answer is you should take the statin at nighttime and take your grapefruit juice in the morning. Then you avoid any possible interaction. What grapefruit juice does is it increases the level of the statin in your bloodstream. You're not on the highest dose of simvastatin, although you're on the highest dose that we actually use today. We used to actually go up to about double that dose. But make it simple. Grapefruit juice in the morning, statin at nighttime, then you avoid any conflict. VA doc was right.
Have a case you need settled? Add it to Judge Zorba's docket by posting on our Facebook or sending us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org and, of course, through Facebook.
And don't forget, you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Christensen. Our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, asking you to join us on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Did you miss something on today's show? Simply go to ZorbaPastor.org to catch up on all things Zorba. There you will find recipes from the show, links to the Facebook page, Zorba's Healthy Living articles, and you can subscribe to the weekly podcast. On the web, that's ZorbaPastor.org.